Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 9th episode of What's Wrong with the Podcast.
My name is Pinar Givanch, and I'm the managing partner of Eriker Baho, an award-winning architecture and design studio based in New York and Istanbul with a mission of creating concepts that address urban, social, and environmental problems.
Today, we have the pleasure of talking to Dion Hughes. Dion is the founder and creative director of Persuasion Arts and Sciences and the co-founder of High Bar. After a long career as a creative director at some of the world's top ad agencies, Dion founded creative brand consultancy Persuasion Arts and Sciences, using creativity to help grow businesses such as Apple, Best Buy, and Lowe's. In 2018, he applied his problem-solving skills to a challenge of a different kind, plastic waste. The company he co-founded, High Bar, is a fast-growing brand of salon-quality shampoos and conditioners that eliminate plastic packaging. High Bar was honored in the 2019 Fast Company Innovation by Design Awards. Dion is a multiple Adweek All-Star creative, has dozens of Effie Awards for marketing effectiveness, and was featured in the New York Times bestseller Decisive by Chip and Dan Heath. Dion, welcome.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here today. Can you tell us a bit about yourself and how you got to where you are today?
Sure. I'm an advertising guy. I've been a copywriter and a creative director for many, many years. Worked on lots of famous brands and written Super Bowl commercials. And I still run a creative brand consultancy here in Minneapolis. But about 4 years ago, I was on a family vacation. And we rented a property by the beach south of Tulum in Mexico. And it was a private property. The beach was a private beach, so very privileged, and the beach was lovely. But where the property line finished, in other words, where the caretaker stopped doing his work, the rest of the beach, for literally as far as the eye could see, was just covered in plastic.
Wow.
My family had already done a little bit of a job in trying to get rid of plastic, and more for, just the chemical makeup of plastic than anything else. But I was just shocked to see and to think that maybe that's what the ocean is really all about, that all the beaches are only clean because somebody gets up in the morning to clean them. Mm-hmm. On getting back to Minneapolis, I happened to be standing in my shower, and for as good of a job as my wife and I had done, we had not attacked the bathroom, and I was just blown away by how much plastic was in the bathroom, in the shower particularly. So I actually literally was like, well, I'll just go and buy there's got to be some good non-plastic shampoos in the world. Mm-hmm. And I looked around, and there honestly weren't that many. The ones that I found I didn't particularly like as far as a brand or even more importantly, just how the product performed. And so I started to think about what sort of product might be able to get rid of plastic. And I happened to kind of network my way around, and I happened to have a few friends who are kind of quasi in the industry. They had a bath bomb company, and I thought maybe they would know some things about making a product. I didn't know anything about any of this stuff. Us plus another guy who just sold his pet food company got together and decided to start working on this problem together. That's how High Bar, eventually what it was called, that's how it was born.
Well, what a way to like address a problem you're like frustrated at right away. Like now that you mention, I'm thinking like almost all of us are guilty of using so much plastic in the shower, even if we like try to reuse our Ziplocs and are very mindful of like recycling, which I guess is my question. Like I don't know if naively believe that we can like recycle what we're utilizing in the bathroom, but there are also a lot of conversation around how recycling is not necessarily happening in so many places. You think you're recycling, but in the end, they all go to the same place. Like, have you ever gathered information around this when you were trying to address the packaging issue?
Yeah, it's just a very complicated material. Plastic, it's actually quite valuable. But the problem with it is that there are so many different types of plastics. Mm-hmm. The colors, the different chemical formulations, the combinations of layers of different polymers. The fact that most people don't clean the plastic, so you know, soiled plastics go into your recycling bin and end up getting rejected by the recycling facilities. Recycling capabilities differ from community to community. It's just very, very complicated. So I think the number bandied about is that 92%, somewhere around there, 92% of plastic just does not get recycled.
Oh, my God.
And that's for the stuff that people are most aware of. So I think if we're in our kitchens and we have an empty plastic container, then we rinse it out. At least that's what I do, and it goes into the recycling bin. So, but when you move to the bathroom, that's a different part of your house, a different mindset. And so a lot of the plastics that you use in your bathroom just end up getting tossed into they don't get rinsed out. They get tossed into a trash can and mm-hmm. probably don't get recycled. So that number is even less for that 92% number is even worse for bathroom products.
Oh my God. I did not know that was 92%. That is so sad. And that is for like what you're mentioning, even for the most simplest approach, I guess, like the water bottles, right? Like yep. The ingredient is always the same. You don't even necessarily have to rinse it out. Mm-hmm. And I guess like to that point, even, you know, it's easy to opt out for an option, as you were mentioning that, okay, if I'm buying water, I can easily get a one that is in a glass bottle and I can reuse it and not aim for the plastic one because I know the ingredient in it in the end is water, right? But when mm-hmm. you're talking about personal care products, it's so, so tricky because there might be some product that is specific that can address your hair issues or skin issues or whatever it is. And you basically settle for whatever packaging they come in with, right? So how did you address, and I'm sure there was a lot of like R&D and user testing, but address the various type of needs in the shower, particularly for consumers in order to be able to, for people to say like, okay, they have no packaging, they're plastic free, and also I can find something that fits me.
Yeah, I think that to me, this is a really important piece of for HYBAR and for any other anybody else who's trying to create change, is that when I was looking around for a product, I mean, I really didn't set out to start a company. I was just looking for a shampoo that had no plastic that still made my hair look okay. And I'm not I'm not a glamorous person. I don't concentrate all that much on my hair, but the products that I tried, and I tried products from all around the world trying to find something that worked, that didn't really work for me. And so bundled into the thinking of this product and the brand is that we can't expect people to change their behavior, i.e.
yeah.
buy a product that doesn't have plastic in it, if it means that they're going to walk out into the world not looking their best. That's putting the problem back onto people. So we took it as our problem to solve, that we need to create a product that performs just as well or better than the products that are in plastic bottles right now, just without the plastic. So that's really what we spent most of our time on, was creating that product that performed at that level.
And I guess like, you know, when we look at the brand, it talks about like plastic free, and that was the background story to it. And then obviously there's a much more higher level focus on the consumer itself, because you're trying to find a product that fits them the best. What were some initial feedback you got from users? Like, were they skeptical about it? Like, they want to try you because they want to be plastic free. But like, were they, you know, questioning, okay, like, I'm going to try this because there's no plastic, but I'm not sure it's going to work. But then, you know, they see it work and then they marry to it. Or was it like adopting the product right away because it just fit their story and it works fine?
A bit of both. I mean, we always knew that there would be a certain set of people who would get rid of plastic at almost any cost. So
yeah,
you know, so we knew that we would get a certain percent of those people by creating a nice brand and making a nice product, but their expectations of how a product performs were less important than just having no plastic. But for us to truly have a proper mass impact, we have to look at the folks who are shopping at some of the bigger retailers in the country and look at what they're buying and why they're buying it. They're buying it to make them to have a high performing product, to have nice hair. So we have to design something and make something for them. Now, we got a lot of skepticism. We got a lot of, and this is 3 or 4 years ago, and I think a lot has changed in terms of awareness of plastic pollution. But when we started, it was like, oh, and we, you know, we shopped this around to all sorts of experts in beauty, in environment. And they were all like, well, it's a cute idea. Gee, I don't know if the world's ready for it. I don't think the people care. I think you should aim this at guys because guys don't care about how their hair looks as much. I mean, it was just nobody anywhere said, wow, that's an awesome idea. You totally should do that. This is what the world needs. Nobody said that.
Wow. Which probably made you more passionate about the idea.
Well, it did. I mean, there's nothing like hearing that. Skepticism in the face of what you think is something really important. And, and we always felt that this is back then, again, before plastic pollution. I really feel like plastic awareness of plastic pollution has kind of passed its tipping point in terms of mass awareness. Before that happened, I just felt like at some point in the future, looking at the pathetic rate of recycling and the increasing amount of plastic that's produced in the world every year, that if I was becoming aware of it in 2015, and I was not an early, you know, there's plenty of, you know, well-known books that were written many years ago about plastic pollution. If I've become aware of it now and the amount of plastic that is leaking into the ocean is only going to increase over the years, at some point that awareness is going to tip over and people are going to realize they're going to make the connection between their own choices and their own behaviors and what they're seeing out in the environment, and that there will be a need for products like ours. So we weren't sure if we were too early, if we were the right people, if we had the right idea. But we knew that it would happen at some point. It wasn't so much a kind of a crystal ball Nostradamus thing. It was just sort of extrapolating out and going, it's only logical. Unfortunately, it's a hard logic. It's a harsh logic. It's just going to happen. And so let's give it a go. We might be too early. We might fall on our faces. And in 10 years' time, we'll see somebody else solve the problem. But let's give it a go.
Yeah. And we're not even, you're right. Like, I mean, there's definitely more awareness around it, but we're not even at that tipping point. Like so many people, and this also depends on the generation, I guess, but like, I guess, I mean, we've looked into some research where it talks about, you know, Gen X actually being very, very responsible about recycling, but maybe, you know, Gen Z actually questions how, like, is recycling really efficient? Like, is recycling actually working, right? Because I have neighbors who, like, I see them recycle everything, every single plastic. But I highly doubt that once that goes into the recycling bin, it actually addresses where it should be going, right? Like, I've heard big institutions, whether like schools, colleges, hospitals, putting the recycle bin in within just to as like almost like a marketing angle to their brand, like showing people, patients or consumers or students, that they're actually like a responsible facility. But in the end, they actually end up throwing all in trash. It's just for sort of like the storefront of the operation. So I think that was like really sad to hear. And I don't think that awareness is out there yet either. So many people think they're being responsible by simply recycling. And I don't think we're in the mindset of we should actually be eliminating the packaging, the plastic packaging altogether if we can. That's like sort of my like overall observation on what's like how plastic is perceived and how the problem is addressed. I was going to ask also, being a consultant yourself, what do you see in terms of the commercial market? Like, how do people perceive, like, there is an understanding of the problem now, but how do you see that being addressed on a grander level?
You know, I haven't really been working on, outside of Hybar, I haven't worked on anything that really would give me an insight on that. So I don't think I have a very good answer.
Is there like an overall like overview when you were setting up Hybar, a research on the market where you saw like how are the current brands trying to address this? Because it's the sake of their own brand too, as Gen X and onwards, they're more aware of the plastic issue.
Yeah, I think that there's some, little dribs and drabs of innovation. And I think, you know, just my feeling on it is that they haven't gone deep enough into rethinking the entire experience. I mean, the lesson to me out of this was, if you want to get rid of a particular type of packaging, it's not about replacing that packaging with something else. You actually have to go, you have to be prepared to look at the entire experience and be prepared to even reinvent the product from the ground up in order to get rid of that packaging. And, you know, just going back to recycling, you know, I wouldn't want anybody listening to this podcast to think that they should not bother recycling. They should absolutely try to do recycling, but to also know that that's not the end of it at all. That's not an excuse or a, you know, now I, my job is done because I've recycled. It's about reducing what you use. It's about buying mindfully. So if there's a choice between a product that's packaged in plastic or not, then pick the one that's not. And those market forces will eventually add up and force change, much bigger change and more interesting innovations from companies.
Yeah. And I guess that we will see, you know, we talked about in one of our early podcasts, like how there are almost too many options for consumers out there, right? And we're bombarded by advertisement nonstop. When we go to a supermarket, when we used to have like two options to pick from, now we have like 100 options to pick from, and it's already super confusing for everybody. And I think personal care is one of those categories where if I want to go and buy a shampoo, like I'm almost overwhelmed by the decision that I have to make. But I think as that awareness grows and you realize there is a differentiator in terms of packaging or no package at all, I think that sort of almost gives a relief to the consumer in the, at least on the shopping experience side, like knowing that they are making a wise choice, right? Like I'm thinking what you're saying in terms of like both shopping experience and then the user experience itself. Like, I think having a very strong message and walking the walk by saying like, oh, it's not, you know, a bottle that is like semi-recycled or, you know, what you were saying in terms of like a minimal effort in terms of sustainability in general. It is a very evident product that it's actually, you know, it really addressing it to the core. So that gives the consumer almost an ease of mind on which what they're choosing right away. And it's sort of to me it's like, I don't know if we're at that tipping point yet, but almost a no-brainer of like in which product you're choosing. No, unless you have a serious, you know, I don't know, maybe a health condition or a very specific type of hair that you're weary about changing your shampoo.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. Right now the choice is pretty simple. If you do have a choice, and non-plastic shampoos are barely even visible in the world.
Yeah.
There aren't that many brands still. And if you are fortunate enough to have that option, on your local supermarket or drugstore, whatever shelf, then that's an easy choice. Our prediction is that if we're right, that that aisle that you see right now, mm-hmm. let's say at your local Target or your local Kroger's or whatever, mm-hmm. that is currently, I don't know, 200 brands of different hair products all in plastic bottles.
Yeah.
That 20 years from now, it'll be the same aisle and the same number of brands, only none of them will be in plastic bottles. Right? That's what it should be. Yeah. I mean, there are so many different ways of thinking about hair care, brands that appeal, product formulations, specialty. There's a lot of different stuff, a lot of different innovations. So we're really in the early days of creating a great product that can hit as many people as possible, work for as many people as possible, and just remove the plastic.
Yeah.
And then wander around Target and look at all the other product categories that use plastic and are, you know, and can possibly be reinvented. I mean, really, truly, that's the sort of stuff that's going to have to happen.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, I guess similar to policy, you know, corporations also always lag. I mean, they're very proactive if they see a demand in the market. But in terms of leading the market on how things should be, they're very pretty much lagging. And I don't know if you ever got this feedback, but, you know, having known a few, you know, mentors or incubators or venture capitals, they usually, like, when somebody's trying to get into a personal care business, they advise, well, you already, like, said, like, heard a lot that that's never going to work, but they also get a lot of advice on, like, well, I mean, you may not be able to survive because you cannot beat, like, such and such corporation, like, because there's these, like, conglomerates who basically, if we see 200 brands of hair products out there, they probably own 100 of them, right? Mm-hmm. And they know the pulse of the market really well. And if they don't see that there is a huge demand from the consumer end, they're not going to push it, even if they have the bandwidth and the financial means in order to do that R&D. I mean, you did it as a startup. And if they don't do it, I think it's really hard to, you know, see the point where you were talking about, like, 20 years from now, we're going to see hair products with no packaging whatsoever. Do you think it's the case? Like, do you also think the bigger brands actually wait around for the consumer demand to kick in and then act? Or there's a shift in how business is done and they are realizing in order to remain relevant, they actually need to up their game?
They do need to up their game. The world will happen to them. The rate of plastic leaking into the ocean is increasing every year. Mm. And so, you know, they're going to be, you already see a lot of pressure on, companies like Coca-Cola, is named as, you know, the most prolific plastic polluter. You know, so that's just going to get worse and worse for them. And so there's a part of it that is about, selling product and making profits for your shareholders and your board and all the rest of it. There's also the corporate citizen, aspect. And then, like you say, the young folk coming in are, you know, going out of their way to choose products that fit more how they see the world and what they see the future being like.
Yeah.
But in terms of innovation, though, it's interesting. It's big companies are far better placed to innovate. They have all the resources, all of the knowledge, but they also have a lot of bureaucracy. It just comes with the territory, and they have a lot of expectations on how a product performs sales-wise. So even though they've got all the capabilities, they also have some built-in difficulties in bringing new ideas to market. There's no big company in the world that would be happy with what our sales are. Like if we were that big company, right, they'd be going, this thing's a failure, it's a flop, this is going to take too long, blah, blah, blah. Us, mm-hmm, just a small, you know, four partners, 12 employees, a little over a year old, we're thrilled. And are we making tons of money? No, but we're putting it all back into the business, and we really think, yeah, we're onto something. And so, you know, for us, the innovation is exciting and a success. Looked at from inside of a big corporation, it might be like, oh, that's cute, but it's kind of a failure. Let's close that team down and redeploy them onto something else.
Right, right, right. Yeah, that's the only frustrating part to know or observe. You know, in the end, I think we're going to come to the point where, because of the Gen Z and the younger generations following, their higher demand from brands and holding them accountable to what they do, we're going to see smaller companies thrive more, like companies that are actually authorities in their own niche, and especially addressing environmental or social problems. And when we get there, and as big corporations see that, they would put their act together, or they will buy out the smaller companies, which generally ends up what's happening. But it's frustrating to know that the organizations that have the most means to make this happen are so driven by profit and pleasing shareholders and whatnot, is that we're so, so delayed on where we should be. And I think, like, tying back to how, like, something happening through policy or a corporation's new agenda, but also going back to what you mentioned in terms of experience, I think eliminating straws was a great case example, right? And we heard big corp chains announcing that they're going to eliminate straws, plastic straws by 2020. There were some policy around it in some states. But in terms of experience, and this is actually a recent conversation we had, is that when doing so, it was a great environmental act, right? However, not considerate of people with disabilities or aging who actually do need a straw in order to drink or consume something. So some, you know, some adapted by placing paper straws or metal straws, which to the point to experience, it's a terrible experience. The paper straw melts in the midway of when you're drinking, and the metal straw leaves a terrible aftertaste. So they actually addressed the problem, which is great, and I'm very supportive of. However, because they didn't do it in a collaborative way, they actually didn't consider the full experience, user experience of it, in order to be able to address everyone. So what do you think in terms of that? Like, how do you think we can have more, solutions that can address all or help all without changing or diminishing the experience of using that product?
Well, it's interesting because we get a lot of feedback on social media from customers or would-be customers asking us about our formulations and ingredients and, you know, how we package and how we ship and where we source from. And I always have to say to people that we're not perfect. We think we've done a really good job of getting rid of plastic in the packaging. And, you know, when you walk into that, when you say, look, this is a product that is seeking to make a positive environmental impact, it's mm-hmm. a more mindful product, then you open the conversation to being mindful about everything. Right. And you know, plastic is our number one concern, but we know that with that territory comes expectations around a whole bunch of other stuff. And we've put most of our attention into the plastic and then the performance of the product. And all I would say is that, you know, we're gonna keep on trying to make our product more perfect, perform even better, have better ingredients. I mean, the truth is that we're in the early days of formulating a really great, society, you know, the world, in formulating a non-plastic product. You think about the amount of competition that there is to create ingredients for all of the hundreds and hundreds, thousands of brands of liquid shampoo versus the companies that make ingredients that are appropriate for a solid shampoo. There's very little to choose from. We've really had to piece this together and do a lot of innovation on our own. Now, you know, we'll keep on improving, but any gaps that we have are opportunities for other people to come in and make a better product. And I'd encourage people to do that. Like, if you think that, you know, it sucks that we have honey in one of our bars, so we're not 100% vegan, then come up with, you know, go into your basement and invent a totally vegan, plastic-free, salon-quality shampoo. I just, you know, so if people have a problem with paper straws or metal straws, then come up with a better straw.
Right. It's an opportunity.
Right. But they're kind of sequential problem solving. So great, we got rid of plastic straws. You know, that made probably a small dent. I think it was actually, I agree with you. I thought it was great because it raised the issue and just puts it onto everybody's radar a little bit.
Yeah.
In practical matters, the amount of plastic, you know, negligible, kind of insidious bad plastic, but still. But okay, so now we've got, you know, there are people who do need to use straws. The metal straws, the paper straws maybe are not as performing as well as the plastic ones. So let's keep on coming up with solutions to that problem. At least we're not dealing with plastic waste anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I guess like a mindset of like being open to innovating nonstop. I mean, you as a younger firm, you're already like, this is your first prototype. And I think it's great that, you know, you're actually listening out to your customers and their feedback, because that is, whether that's a, you know, great feedback or a complaint, that is a means for you to, you know, adapt or change or either innovate in what you do. And it is basically almost like a co-creation way of like with your users. I mean, they're not directly participating in the production of it, but their feedback is, you know, getting you 50% ahead on how you should better your product for the next round. As a progress maker in an industry that is viciously competitive, what would be your advice to other progress makers, whether they're in personal care industry or something else?
Well, I think that I would say that if it's progress, then it's also threatening to people. And alien somehow. That's the sense that I got from our early conversations, was that people, the industry experts that we were seeking advice from, almost a part of their expertise was getting in the way of them seeing what was possible. You know, they were seeing the world through their expert lens as it exists right now, and were not able to see the problem and that this is a potential solution. So I was heartened by our own convictions, taking the best of those conversations from experts, because they do have a lot of good stuff, but they're also, it also makes you kind of focus on what you really truly believe in and never ever losing that. So, you know, my advice to people since, and I've been lucky to have these conversations with folks, is that, you know, really focus on that thing that you think is wrong in the world and what your idea on how to solve that is. And then listen to the experts, but at the same time, don't listen to them, because they're going to tell you that it's not going to work.
Right.
Otherwise, they'd be doing it. Then they're not doing it. So that's the nature of new ideas. And the nature of new ideas is that they exist in your head in a perfect, beautiful way. And nobody else can see that. Nobody else can see what you're thinking until it actually happens. And then they go, oh, yeah, I always thought that was a great idea. That's literally what has happened with this.
Right, right, right. And then you see the bigger brands and corporates follow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was great. Anything you would like to add, Dion, that you feel like you haven't addressed?
I think we touched upon this about the product design and the brand design of Hybar. I think you look at the whole problem and you go, okay, it's just a systemic problem. Like the retailers put plastic products on shelves because that's most convenient. Plastic is cheap and durable, so that's what happens. So the products can exist in a particular form, and so hundreds of thousands of companies build up around all of that. So recycling companies and trash companies and freight systems and packaging and manufacturing systems. Think of all of the businesses that feed into that. And so we've had to step right back from all of that and reinvent as much as we can. And we've still got a long way to go, you know, in terms of how we source our ingredients, what packaging the ingredients themselves come in. You know, you quickly realize that the problem is everywhere. So so hopefully with a successful business, hopefully we get to be more successful. Hopefully other people will either be inspired by us or copy us or look in a different category and do what we're doing. That system will slowly change, and there'll be companies invented to answer our own business needs.
Right, right. And I guess this ties into, you know, giving an advice too. Just because the problem is systemic and it's much bigger than your own product doesn't mean you can't start somewhere, right? Like,
you got to start somewhere.
Yeah. And you did it in the most elegant way.
We hope so.
Well, thank you so much, Dion. This was great. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Tune in next week when we sit down with Evran Uzar, Assistant Professor of Urban Planning in the School of Design Strategies at Parsons School of Design. Evran is an urban planner and practitioner working on community-led housing processes, civic engagement, and critical heritage studies, activism, and interventions in the public space. For more information on our events and podcasts, visit us at whatswrongwith.xyz.